win the prize for the longest title. So I'm going to talk to you today, and hopefully can fit it all in, about STD choices, which is, as I say, integrating alcohol-exposed pregnancy prevention into routine care in our STD clinics in Baltimore, Maryland, at the Baltimore City Health Department and Denver Health. These are our author affiliations, and I also want to acknowledge the help of ICF Macro, who is our evaluation agency, but is not listed here. Oops. So, quick overview. I'm going to define what is meant by choices, our project implementation and goals, our project evaluation, and our lessons learned. A little background, and I think we're all speaking from the same page here about the importance of reproductive and sexual health being merged, and this will be an intervention project that tries to bridge both of those, and you can judge the success of that. So 500,000 women, pregnant women a year report alcohol use in the past month, and 80,000 report binge use, and of course we know with reporting that the number is probably higher than that. 50% of women of childbearing age drink alcohol and 12.5% binge. 50% of pregnancies are unplanned, and 50% of those occur among women who are using no or ineffective birth control. So obviously we have a significant number of women who are at risk. And for the purposes of our project and actually in general, risky alcohol use for women is defined as, they call it hazardous alcohol use. Sometimes you'll hear referred to as heavy alcohol use or at risk. But it is more than four or more drinks on one occasion or more than eight or more drinks per week. And risky, obviously at risk for alcohol-exposed pregnancy, is any occurrence of vaginal intercourse when contraception was not or ineffectively used. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Choices. It's an excellent program, and I'm not biased, but it's an evidence-based behavioral intervention to prevent prenatal alcohol exposure in high-risk women, to prevent alcohol-exposed pregnancy. It was developed by Karen Ingersoll, Louise Floyd, Mary Velasquez, and Linda Sobel, who bring together expertise in alcohol use, alcohol-exposed pregnancy, and motivational interviewing. So they got the top people here, and they wrote up a curriculum that's four sessions plus a family planning session. So as I say, it uses motivational interviewing, which is a specialized skill, and you must be trained in it to implement it effectively. So it targets adoption of effective contraception and or reduction of alcohol use. And it was tested for a few years in several different settings that were very different, and it was effective in reducing alcohol-exposed pregnancy. Interestingly, in their settings, they found that women primarily, there was greater uptake of contraception. Our results are a little bit different. So in 2009, so the original Choices program was funded by the CDC, and in 2009, CDC put out an RFA for funding in STD clinics. And Baltimore City Health Department and Colorado Department of Public Health and the Environment were the two who were fortunate to be selected. And the reason is that we have very high rates of hazardous alcohol use, about 30% in our setting in Baltimore, and I think Colorado is about the same. And when you combine the use of contraception, you have about more than 20% of the women who are at high risk for an alcohol-exposed pregnancy. We also had the medical infrastructures in an STD clinic, obviously, to follow women, because we've got our DIS specialists, and they can find anyone, I think. So that's very helpful for tracking women to do follow-ups. So our goal, so this is a different project than the original RCTs. Obviously, we want to see how we adapt the Choices program in a real-world setting. So we need to adapt the curriculum. We need to improve STD clinics to reduce the risk of alcohol-exposed pregnancy. And obviously, we had to have procedures for screening, recruitment, and retention. Because remember, these women aren't coming to the STD clinic to be told they have an alcohol issue or to prevent pregnancy. They're coming to get STD care. So our first goal, we had CDC consultants come and train us in MI and in the Choices curriculum. So their original curriculum was four sessions plus family planning. Now, you all know working in the STD clinics, or for those of you who do work there, that's going to be difficult to get women to come back for four sessions, realistically. So we changed the curriculum and folded it into two sessions with a family planning visit, and that seems to work okay. We piloted it. We locally adapted it for our population, and Denver made their adaptations as well. So then we hired MI counselors to deliver choices. We identified physical space. We talked to the clinicians. Our clinicians at Baltimore City Health Department are not trained in contraceptive procedures, so they don't. If a woman asks for the pill, they can be put on it, but otherwise they're sent to family planning. In Baltimore, family planning is on the next floor, so as you can imagine, a lot of women don't get there. That's just enough of a distance. And that will become key in our findings later on. And then we identified key referral sources who might send women to us. And we put a page on the website, which actually has received a lot of hits on the Baltimore City Health Department website. So in terms of the intervention retention, we had very good uptake in the first session, which again, when 92% of the women, when approached and discussed the after screening that they may be at risk for, they were drinking at risky levels, 92% of them opted to stay and receive the first intervention session, for which they were not paid. So it's interesting that you have a fairly receptive audience. I think that's a good sign. We're less successful in getting them back for a second session, but if possible, you can always deliver that on the phone. And then we had follow rates at 3, 6, and 9 months. As you can see, the follow-up rates fall off a little bit, 62% for Baltimore and 50% for Denver. From our perspective, that's a good follow-up rate because, again, you're asking women, and I can speak for Baltimore, it's an urban setting. The women are not wealthy. It's an extra trip to come in. We don't use incentives for them to come back, so they're coming back under their own steam. We did offer incentives originally, but we eventually dropped them. So they're coming back because they're interested in following up with the program. We found that texting was very helpful in reminding them to come to their appointments because they're young and they text. And we also used the disease intervention specialists and flags in our electronic medical record to let us know when a woman had come back to the STD clinic for a return visit. So in terms of project evaluation, what's key in a real-world setting is you've got to keep your follow-up very simple, short and simple. Otherwise, women are not going to stay, and there's always the risk of over-assessing and that being the cause of the change in behavior, not your intervention. So our brief intervention outcome measure was to measure number of drinks, drinking days per week, number of drinks per drinking day, number of binge days, greatest number of drinks in one day, and effective contraceptive use. We also asked the clients after each session what they thought of us, and we also talked to the medical and administrative staff. So at baseline, Baltimore was a little bit older than Denver. Baltimore is largely African American. Denver is a mix of white and Hispanic women. Both sites had a binge median of 3 binge days a week. Baltimore drinks more days, but Denver drinks more drinks than a drinking day. That's probably an age thing because when you're younger, when you do binge, you binge a lot. As you get older, you sort of spread out your alcohol use over many days so that you're drinking more days, but perhaps a little bit less because the body can't take it. At least that's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. So this is our combined 6-month outcomes, and I tell you, we struggled with this Venn diagram. So I want to make one important comment about that just, anyway, 82% of the women, now remember, this is a follow-up of about 62% of the women from Baltimore and 50% from Denver, but 82% reduced their risk of AEP, and as you can see, there are a variety of ways that women can reduce the risk of an alcohol-exposed pregnancy. So 52% reduced their risk of alcohol to none or non-hazardous levels. 27% used effective contraception. 18% used condoms, which is obviously not effective contraception. But it's kind of interesting. This is an STD clinic, and 18% is the uptake on change in contraceptive behavior. So I still don't think we're doing a very good job of getting women to use condoms. 26% sexual abstinence. Now, that's that means that they did not engage in vaginal sex. So we really need to clarify that because obviously we don't want to, there may be all kinds of other sexual practices that women had greater uptake of, so I don't know the answer to that, just to clarify. And obviously 18% are continued risk. There were some interesting differences by site. Abstinence was more common uptake among Baltimore. And you might think that maybe was a change in opportunity, that maybe at 3 months, you know, it was they dropped their partner or whatever. But actually, you see abstinence rates, again, not engaging in vaginal sex, those rates rise over time. So women are clearly making active choices not to put themselves at some kind of risk for an alcohol-exposed pregnancy. And what other sexual practices they're engaging in, I don't know, or whether they're not having sex at all. We can't discriminate that from our data. Is that right, Macro? Yeah. Okay. But Denver was more successful in reducing their alcohol use. And again, I think that goes to sometimes the age of the women. The older you are, the more entrenched your patterns of alcohol use become, and they're a little bit harder to interrupt. So it really argues for the importance of this program being extended to younger women. So the biggest problem in Baltimore is that our family planning clinic, as I said before, is one floor down from our STD clinic. And I think the popular word in research and government speak now is being siloed, and I think we're a really good example of the risks of that. It was very hard to get, we initiated the sort of quick start program to get practitioners in the STD clinic to provide the pill or, they wouldn't do depo, but to offer the birth control pill. But most of the women actually preferred to have a visit if they were going to start on contraception. And that family planning visit, even when we gave them priority, it's another visit to get back to a clinic to a population that's already pretty stressed and has multiple challenges. So I think a clear direction in the future is that STD clinicians need to learn family planning or have the opportunity to do it. A lot of them did know how to do it but had fallen off in their skills a little bit from what they tell me. But the opportunity in both clinics to be trained, cross-trained, I hope that that comes out of this. This is certainly one of the aims of the Baltimore City Health Department. It's all about money. For Denver, one of the problems that they ran into is that the clinicians were being asked to screen and recruit. And for those of you who are clinicians in this room, you know how much you already have to do. And so that extra step of actually needing to recruit the women into the study was was too much. So once Denver dropped that step out for clinicians and just had them screen and then say, okay, here's the choices counselor, you'll now be talking to her, that worked very well. What's good for the program is that our feedback has been great. We did it anonymously. By the way, if you want to get your staff to answer any questionnaires, create a raffle. So for everybody who answered the staff questionnaire, they got a $10 gift certificate at Amazon. We got 100% response rates. I'm serious. It works every time. So the staff found, the administrative and the clinical staff felt that we blended in. That was one of our goals. We made it as easy as possible. We became part of the staff there, attending the meetings, provided a few lunches from time to time, but we were happy about that. And then the clients also. So what did we learn? We learned that this choices program can be effectively implemented in an STD clinic. There was excellent uptake by providers and staff through engaging them early in the process. We did grand rounds. We came to meetings. We let them know what we were doing and why we were doing it, and they bought into it. And we communicated. If there was a problem, there was someone to talk to. If we were very careful about how we took patients out of the queue and returned them to the queue, so we never got in the way of the STD clinicians doing the providers doing their work. We also had quick screening. If you want to implement this program in your settings, you want to have a screen that's quick and easily integrated into clinic flow. If you can make it part of the electronic medical record, that's helps too. Two sessions are feasible. Session two can be done on the phone if need be, which is cost-saving and certainly saving for the women. Retention is increased by using text messages, a flag in the electronic medical record, and then use of the DIS folks who are very helpful to us. Co-location, as I've said, maybe that's my one takeaway message here, co-locations of services is really helpful, and I hope we see that change. And it's clear, choices is a two-session model. You can't expect in two sessions you're going to have an impact on behavior that's 12 months down the road. But if you can sustain it at 6 months, and then I think women need a booster session. So that's it. Thank you.
Any questions? Hi, I'm Carrie Sickler with Marathon County Health Department in Wisconsin. And we use several incentives at our health department to retain our clients in our various programs. And I know you had mentioned that you had actually discontinued the incentive. So I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on that and give me your reasoning why you had discontinued them.
Sure. You know, it's interesting about incentives. We always assume people won't come back unless they're paid. And in the end, you set up this relationship that Hopkins has with the surrounding community around the hospital. The research, the people from the surrounding community get paid to come to Hopkins and do our studies. It's just a dynamic I've never really been comfortable with. But when we decided to just examine it over time and see, did we really need the incentives? And so we mailed them sometimes to, women wouldn't pick them up. They would forget. They would leave the clinic and forget to get them. We'd mail them to them. And then we thought, well, let's just stop it and see if it makes a difference. And lo and behold, the women actually were pretty happy to tell us how they were doing. So it's a reminder to us that we make assumptions about people. Now, certainly with some research, it's very labor-intensive. But, you know, you could try it and see if it... But I think also your evaluation has to be fairly short and certainly non-invasive. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Shannon Wood, DIS in Iowa, and I was just wondering, are you doing training then to the STD clinic nurses on family planning then?
We are not yet. This is our hope. It's discussed, well, you know how it works in health departments. It can be in discussion for quite a bit of time before it actually changes. So, but there is the discussion, and I think that this project is one of the places that proves the need for co-location and co-training.
I'll say though, for Denver already is an integrated family planning STD clinic. It's a 10-site long, right in the STD clinic, so it happens.
Wonderful.
All the time. And I'm happy to talk to anybody about that if you have questions.
Okay. Right, Karen is my PI counterpart in Denver, and they are, I'm putting on my mission hat for Baltimore, but Denver actually does it right.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.